This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Hello, middle-level educators. Are you looking for a nationwide type of conference at the fraction of the cost? The North Carolina Association for Middle-Level Education welcomes you to Charlotte, North Carolina, March 24th through the 26th for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference. My name is David James, NCMLE Marketing and Conference Director, and I want to personally invite you to our annual conference. You will not want to miss our keynote and featured speakers that lead over 100 middle-level specific teaching and learning sessions. Our featured lineup includes EDU experts from across the country, such as principal and leadership expert Baruti Kafele, Darren Peppard, LaQuanta Nelson, Zach Bauermaster, and the host of this podcast, Mr. Charles Williams. The NCMLE Inspire Conference is for everyone. Go to ncmle.org to register your team for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference today.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Counter Narrative Podcast. As always, thank you so much for jumping back into this space. Really honored to have you here. If this is your first time, thank you so much for checking it out. If you enjoy what you hear today, which I am sure you will, be sure to go and check out all of the other amazing episodes. But today we are in for a treat. Now, it's interesting. I was thinking about the intro for this one. And I know that oftentimes I say, hey, you know, this person, we've got to share space and stages together. Or other times I'm like, you know, this is the first time we're ever connecting. And this guest is unique in a whole different way. And the fact that this is our third time sharing podcast space together in the same month, within like 2 weeks. And in fact, the last one we just recorded was less than 24 hours ago. So that is new, but there's power behind that because this educator is phenomenal, doing some amazing things, and I cannot wait to share space with her in just shortly. About 2 months from the recording of this episode, maybe about a week or so from when this will probably drop. So I have on the podcast with me today the one and the only, the amazing Charlie Peck. How are you, Charlie?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that intro.
Yeah, you know, I was cautioning you, right? As we were like scheduling everything out, I was like, hey, please don't get tired of me. We're going to be sharing a lot of space together, but here we are.
It's nice though. You know what? It's important to have conversations with people you align well with. And that's why we keep showing up in each other's spaces.
I like that, right? If our purposes are aligned, if the work that we're doing is aligned, it's meant to be, we will continue to cross paths. So before we go any further, right? Talk a little bit about who you are. Introduce yourself to the listeners. Who is Charlie?
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Charlie Peck. And I guess what's a little different about me is that though I've been in education for over 20 years, K through 12, I spent 18 years teaching high school. And my curriculum allowed me to teach about personal and family development, issues that affect kids in society and anthropology, sociology. So I got to actually teach mental illness topics. And then what's even better is I got to teach kids, adolescents, how their brain worked. And so it allowed me to dive deeply into that. And eventually I noticed, Charles, that there were so many issues these kids were having and I didn't understand why. I didn't understand why they were surrounded by all of these adults who cared about them, and they were still struggling in a system that's set up to support them. And so I went and got my Master of Social Work degree because I wanted to understand structurally what was going on. And ultimately, that led into clinical work. So I'm a licensed clinical therapist, and I've seen a lot. And so I eventually stepped out of teaching so I could work with school districts across the nation in order to help them improve their school mental health system. So that's the gist of what I'm doing today.
You know, something that you said I think is powerful, right? This idea, I remember doing a session not too long ago and somebody said, should we teach our kids this? Like it was the idea of understanding that brain science, right? How learning works. And we were talking about trauma and things like that. And of course, I said, you know, it's always good. I think people should understand how they operate, right? But it's also that then you're also responsible as we begin to unpack, right? So make sure that you're ready to do that work. But I think it's amazing that there was a class that you were able to teach with young people to say, hey, like, let's investigate this. Let's explore this, because I can only imagine what it would be like to be in a space and to be experiencing things, to be feeling things, and to really not understand why, right? And as a father of two recently non-teenagers, right? They are now 20 and 21. There was that a lot, right? Like, I don't know why I'm feeling this way, Dad. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. So kudos to you for being in a space where you could actually help process and for them to understand who they are.
Well, it did help them. I mean, it enlightened me all the time. What they did is when they learned about what happened to them in their lives and their childhood and who they are up to the point that they are, and that we had those discussions, they were relieved. Like, they were able to forgive themselves for some of those things. And they were processing. I'm glad you said that, because they were able. Now, I didn't do any clinical work in the classroom. I certainly wasn't a therapist at that time. But they needed to talk about these things, and they needed to understand themselves better. So it did help. And I noticed those things over and over and over again. And so that's what led me into all the work that I'm doing now. But I'll tell you, one of the things that we've been doing for 30 years that has not been working for kids is teaching them SEL. And I know that SEL is very important. It's actually essential to humanity. There's tons of evidence for it. But what we've been doing in our school systems is we've been teaching kids SEL. We've been teaching them to be resilient. And what we do is we throw them right back into the same toxic environments with burned out teachers and stressed out parents. And we're expecting them to function well. And it's just not working.
I just was getting a visual there. Like, all right, good. All right. Back in you go. And you're like, wait, no. Like, it's great that we're doing one side, but I like what you said. We also have to address the environment, the systemic issues, right? And not just to say, hey, we're just going to build you up so that way you're better. But it seems like we do that so often in so many different areas that instead of addressing the issue, right, we just try to make people better equipped to deal with it. And it's like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. Right. I'm wondering now. I'm like, man, I wonder which direction we're going to go today. So, you know, obviously on this conversation, and when you mentioned like we're doing SEL wrong, I was like, ooh, is this it? Like, what is it that you want to talk about today?
Yeah. I mean, we could easily talk about how SEL just isn't working, or everything that we've been throwing at this system, because we've been throwing a lot at it to try to improve mental health for our youth, is just not working. And so one of the things that I've done is, that's the work I do. I needed to understand why it wasn't working. And so that's pretty clear to me. So we can talk about why the system is actually failing our kids and what we can actually do about it, because I'd like to focus on solutions. And the very first thing we can say here is the word trauma, and that is what I specialize in as a clinician. But you know what? I don't like to use it, because it's one of those buzzwords, and you know in education how this works. You hear a buzzword and then you get a lot of people like tapping out. They're like, oh my gosh, here we go again. And so listen, it's a process that we all have to understand that goes on, that's very physiological. It has nothing to do with politics. And so I don't care how we frame it. We just need to understand that what we've done isn't working. So what we need to do is keep it really simple to solve this problem that we all get to do. So we can go in that direction of how to solve this in a simpler way.
All right. That sounds good. And I absolutely understand, you know, the idea of buzzwords, right? Kind of infiltrating and putting up that barrier, right? Obviously, I do this equity work. And even today during our board meeting, that word, I don't know how many times I heard it. And parents, you know, pushing back on it, the board using it. And I was just like, this is why it becomes a problem, right? Everybody just throws it out willy-nilly and people get defensive. So as we're talking, right, then about trauma, as we're talking about, you know, SEL, right? And even me, when you were like, hey, you know what, SEL, it's not that in itself it's bad from what I'm hearing, and maybe we'll clarify, right? It's this idea to say it's incomplete, right? There's more that we need to do. So let's jump into this because I'm curious to hear more.
Right. Well, one of the reasons it's not working, much like many systems we're using, is because it's overwhelming our staff and it's inconsistent. So we're doing piecemeal solutions and programs that are not being used. They're in silos, right? So they're not fitting well together to have a complete solution. And so there's not long-term sustainability. I mean, we have changing staff, changing leadership, changing initiatives all the time. And so we need something that is going to have autonomy in their buildings and then long-term sustainability. And so anytime I think of crisis that we're in and the chaos that I've definitely seen kids and families go through, what do we have to do in those moments? Well, it's simple to me. We've got to keep things simple. That's my word this year, and it has been for a while, because in the midst of chaos, we all have to slow down and keep things simple. And so the solution has to be simple as well in order to sustain the people that are already positioned in our buildings. We have to keep them there. So we've got to make the solution integrate into their everyday practice. Now, SEL tries to do that, but there are so many things to remember, so many strategies. Not everybody's trained. So we go right back to the basics and we provide people with some basic skills that I use my teacher lens, the experience in the classroom, and also my clinical lens, and they are married together and they easily infuse into everyday teaching practice.
So, you know, as you were talking, I heard this phrase, right? Simple, sustainable solutions, right? And it makes sense, right? I mean, I hear you, this idea of first, you know, one of the pieces that you mentioned is that, you know, we're talking about SEL, but we have adults, right? Who are struggling. So there is definitely that adult component. Like one of my favorite phrases is that, right? That a dysregulated adult can't regulate a dysregulated child, right? And like, it's okay. That is normal. It is normal to have these responses, but also understand that if you're not taking care of yourself, that you can't take care of others. And you're right, you know, because of the turnover, you know, right now in my building, I have a vacancy that we've been trying to fill. And unfortunately, I have two teachers who have been out for a while because of just illness. And I worry, as we were having conversations about these two teachers, I worried about how much of that was stress-induced, right? Just because of the field itself and, of course, questioning, you know, the work that we're doing. So can we dive in just a little bit into your approaches? I mean, you mentioned there are all these complex things, right? All these piecemeal, and we kind of hope that they work. And you're like, hey, there's a really simple approach, which then, because it's so simple, it allows it to be sustained. Right. And because it's simple and because it's sustained, then it's going to lead to real solutions and not these bandages, right? If you will, where we're all walking around like mummies.
Right. Well, and first of all, we had to identify the problems. So the problems are apparent, and all the research points that way, and all the practical work we do points in the direction. And that's where the 9 skills, you might hear me talk about the 9 essential skills, is each one of the skills helps to kind of combat each one of the problems. So for example, one of the problems we're seeing in mental health is negative thinking. Now it shows up so much in humans because our brains are actually, we're in survival mode. And so what happens is we're scanning our environment for the negative things that are a threat to us. And we all know that everybody has a different perception. Everyone has a different life experience. And so that threat to you is going to look and feel different. Mm-hmm. And that's another word I avoid, by the way, is the trigger, because people are sick of hearing it. But hey, we'll just explain it without using that word, right? It's something that charges you. It's something emotionally that charges you, which is why those stress hormones are constantly flooding our systems. You have an overworked, undervalued, or at least some teachers feel undervalued, even though that may not be the case, they're feeling it. And mm-hmm. so they're carrying around with them an emotional charge all day long. And they literally are flooded with these stress hormones that do not subside. And so when that happens, it actually makes you tired. It makes you irritable. You're not functioning at your best. So the solution, going back to the simplified approach and the sustainable results, I always start with teachers. Because they're the ones who already have the relationship with the kids, they're positioned. When they can learn to manage their own mental health and wellness and truly, truly manage that, they can show up for kids energized and then learn to step outside of themselves to respond more effectively to kids. And there's skills around that. And I'll give you an example. A lot of people like to hear the example. So that negative thinking that we have that is very brain-based, okay, that's our go-to. We have to work to think more positively. But when we're in that, we call that a story spiral. So something happens with the kid or something happens and you perceive something to be going on, then you go into what we call a story spiral. So your thoughts and your emotions and your reactions are all interrelated. And then however you react, other people are reacting to you. So if you're not having a great response, somebody's going to respond negatively back to you. And then you continually spiral out of control with those thoughts and those emotions. And then you have to function through that. But mm-hmm. we teach people how to unravel that story spiral so that they can, in fact, function better. And so it's things like that. It's reframing. It's identifying what is that insecurity or what is that negative thought? What's keeping you there? Because it's usually based on lies. It's usually not even based on facts.
So I'm going to guess as I'm listening to you, because it makes sense, right? When you said simple, it really, really is simple. And I'm excited to hop into one of your sessions and learn about these nine skills. But I was also assuming, like, as people hear these, right, as they share space with you, that word keeps coming up is simple. So mm-hmm. I'm curious that if it's simple, right? If there's the research out here that shows these pieces, then why is it within our schools that these are not the approaches that we're taking?
That's a great question. Yeah.
We're throwing in those programs, those, you know, patchwork sort of things as we referenced earlier. Like, I'm just curious, like, why is there not an alignment there?
Because when we're frazzled, we're lacking awareness and we're not thinking straight. So we're reacting. And that's one of the problems we have is we're in a constant reactive state of triage. And so when we're feeling that way, we're not actually putting thought into it. So we're reacting and that's causing more problems. Our kids are doing the same darn things. Our parents are doing the same things. And so that's the spillover effect. If your kids are struggling at home, and again, parents really are struggling, they're lacking tools too. They're lacking skills and tools. We all know. I was there myself. And then those kids go into the school environment and then they struggle there and it's cyclical. And so we keep throwing our kids back into these same environments and now they're stressed, now they're reactive and they don't feel secure in any of the spaces that they're in. So it's a constant problem that is not serving anybody within the system well. Now I'm saying this, Charles, and there are people functioning well in our system and there are people who are energized. So this isn't happening all the time, but boy, it's happening a lot because we keep talking about it. We're frazzled. We're in the midst of chaos. And when that is happening, people are not accessing the things that they know to do. So let me dive into that even.
Sure.
What do therapists, and I'm asking you this, putting you on the spot, what do therapists do really well?
I would say that therapists, what they really do well is listen.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the best skills I've ever learned. And I thought I was a great listener going into that training. And what it teaches you is skill around that. It teaches you to check yourself when a thought or a bias jumps in your brain, because it will, about the person you're trying to listen to. It keeps you in check. And the thing is if we don't remember to be good, empathetic listeners, then we're not actually going to show up that way. And so one of our skills is empathetic listening. So a lot of people say, well, what about active listening? Yeah, it's a good skill, but guess what? There's a lot of things to remember to do. And so we have to keep it simple because when we're in the midst of chaos, we don't have time to think about it. We need to be able to reflexively have a skill that we can call up in the midst of chaos and overwhelm. And so that's what something like this does. Empathetic listening, the way we teach it, is truly to be attuned to the other person. And again, we do workshop some of this, but by the time they leave that session with us, they don't have to go back and access some binder to remember how to do it and work it into their planning sessions. They don't have to do that. They leave because they know how to do it because it is easy enough and we use visuals and things too. It can be simple. It goes back to human basics. And we forget to do that because we're overwhelmed. And let's be honest, we're all pretty egocentric. We have to keep ourselves in check to step outside of ourselves and create a safer, secure space for other people.
So, you know, as you were talking, I had a light bulb moment or an aha, maybe. I don't know. I'm saying it because I'm going to bring it right back to you for a point of clarification. Sure. But it almost seemed self-manifesting, right? Like the idea that so often we have these very complex systems, right, that require multiple steps that I have to remember to do, mm-hmm. that we expect to utilize in times of chaos in you know, crisis. But what we know, right, is that in those times, as I think you were alluding to earlier, right, you have that amygdala hijack, right, mm-hmm. the so-called reptile brain takes over, mm-hmm. and everything becomes exactly reflexive. And in that moment, we know with our students, right, we can't really communicate. No learning is happening. Mm-hmm. And yet somehow we are thinking, you know what, this is the best time to figure out how do we pull out that 12-step program on how to best live, right? Like, whereas you're saying no, because of what happens to us naturally, biologically, we need something that is going to kick in automatically to help us through the process of then disengaging from that. Am I correct?
Yes, you are. Because what we need to do is rewire our brain. We do know that we can rewire our brain. And we actually throw in these rapid resets that are really good, quick little things to do that and distract the amygdala and all of that. But if we all know that we can rewire our brain, why are we trying so hard to do that when we can, again, reflexively learn something so simple that will go to that? When we catch ourselves making an assumption or catch ourselves being negative, which that's something we have to learn to do because it shows up in our body, in our nervous system, because it starts in our brain and goes all through our nervous system. When we catch ourselves doing that, that's when we can rewire our response. Instead of being reactive, our response can be favorable. And that's what it takes. And that's investing in human capital. That's what we're going after.
So now I'm curious, as I'm sure the listeners are, I'm like, this is, I see the pieces, right, okay. falling together. And this is only, you know, going to be like a 30-minute conversation as opposed to one of your full sessions. So now I'm thinking to myself, all right, Charlie, give me something. If I know that these big pieces, these big complex systems do not work during these times, right, because of our natural response, we got to simplify it. What can there be something? Is there something that you can share with us, a tool, a resource, a practice for us to say, how can we begin going down that route as opposed to utilizing these systems that clearly are not working?
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to put it back to you real quick. What is one complaint, one major complaint you constantly hear your staff say?
There are many. Right. I would say that probably the biggest complaint, let's just go with cell phones.
Cell phones. Okay. So one of the things I would say is, listen, and again, we would jump into this a lot more and it would depend on a lot of policy and all of that. But we say, let's start with what's working already. So let's say that a student brings a cell phone in and this teacher's really frustrated with in their class. And I would say, okay, if your rule is that it needs to go away and you don't want to see it at all through class, you have to clearly state that, which we all know to do. And I would say, use the path of possibilities here. This is simple. You ask the kid what it is they want and what it is they don't want. Well, if the rule is, if I see your cell phone, you lose it for the whole day, goes to the office, and then your parent has to come pick it up, or you lose it for class, whatever, or to the whatever that is. You as the teacher, you say, okay, what don't you want to happen? Well, I don't want to lose my cell phone for the day. Okay, what do you want? Well, I want to be able to have my cell phone on me in case I need it throughout the rest of the day. Okay, so if I see you make that decision, you're making a decision to pull it out in the middle of class when I clearly already told you that if I see it, you're going to put it away till the end of the day, then is that choice leading you to what you want or don't want? And there's actually a little visual that we use. I use this in crisis with kids at the hospital when these kids they're in big trouble, a lot of them. And it actually helps simplify and gives them a visual of which path they're taking with this one decision. And sometimes it's several decisions and you visualize one side or the other. And so if you keep yourself calm in that and that you've taught them what we call it the path of possibilities, and you show them and you point to it and say, okay, if you get this out and I'm seeing this, is that leading you down the path you want or what you don't want? And it simplifies it for them and it simplifies it for you. So nobody has to be an emotional wreck about this. It's like, what do you want or what don't you want? Mm-hmm. And again, it's so very simple that it can work because there's not fluff around it. Like what bothers me is the fluff, let's just sift through all the junk and let's solve problems. You got a problem? What do you need? Oh, you need that? All right. Go to the bathroom, come back. I'll see you when you get back. Make it quick. I trust that you're going to go there and come back. I mean, it's simple things over time. Everybody talks about making connections with kids and building relationships with staff. It is that, but a lot of times they don't know how to do that, or they think they know how, but there's a disconnect somewhere. So if we use really simple tools and continue to use language that everybody's using, I just actually got a text today from somebody who is using what we have, the circle of control, which people might've heard of this. But it's like, what is in my control? And we actually have a poster and stuff and they hang it up. What is in my control in this moment and what is outside of my control? Because part of the problem we're feeling too in chaos is we feel like we lack a lot of control. Yeah. And we do in a system. And so what can I control right now in this moment? We talk about the power imbalance. But they sent me a text and they said, I'm actually using this right now. And they were showing that they were pointing to it. And it's so simple. It's like an immersive language experience. You know, if you're trying to teach your school how to a French culture and you want to learn the language and how to engage with each other, I mean, you've got to immerse yourself in it, which means everybody has to be speaking the language. So that is a simple, I mean, I know it was a long answer, but a simple way I would address that moment. And if there's a pattern over time that's happening that's not working, then sometimes you pull in something else or understand like, well, what's really going on? Like what's going on? So like, there's a few more pieces I could dive into there, but I don't want to overwhelm everybody.
No, I appreciate it. I think, you know, I'm sure as people are listening, it makes sense, right? It's that idea of choices, right? And it sounds a lot, which I'm glad, because it sounds a lot of the practices that I have adopted over time. I always find it fascinating when you do something and then somebody gives like a name to it and you're like, oh, that's what it was.
That's what you've been doing. Yeah. Well, it's simple, isn't right. it? Does it work and for you?
Exactly. That's all those things were. And, you know, I'm often told, like, you know, Mr. Williams, AP, Charles, like you're rarely angry, right? Or at least we see it. You don't yell, you don't scream. You're always like, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, like, because what are those things going to solve, right? Taking myself out, I like the idea, the path of possibilities, right? And those are some of those things that we walk through, right? Like, well, what choice are you going to make? Like, these are the outcomes you choose, mm-hmm. and I try to tell my teachers, like, you can want an outcome, you can want them to make a choice. But when they don't make the choice that you want them to make, it is not like you cannot own that. Right. Like you cannot personalize. You can be a good friend of mine. You know, we were at a conference recently and was talking about like logical and emotional responses. Right. And when somebody has an emotional response, you respond emotionally and then that person responds emotionally. And as she was using this visual, I was like, Connie, that absolutely makes sense. Like we see it so often. you know, I'm sure my wife hates that I just sit in that little logical spot. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to respond emotionally to you. But right. I appreciate the explanation. I think it makes sense. I'm sure the listeners, it made sense to them as well.
Well, it will depend on what they need to do. And by the way, this works with leaders and their staff members. Mm-hmm. It works with kids who are 5 years old. And again, it has to be designed to where it is a cultural move. We have to have transformation. So when I've worked with kids versus teens versus adults in therapeutic practice, and I was using tools and kept going back to some of the very same similar things, I'm like, why can't we bring this into education? Why can't we bring this into a different system? Because we're working with families. I know other people are struggling in education. Why aren't we using these tools when they don't have time to go to therapy? They don't have time to invest it, like sure. The time and the money. Why are we not just bringing some of these tools in there and just infusing them into everyday practice? So we don't need a separate SEL class. Keep it. If it's working for your school, keep it. Do it. But we don't need to teach that as an extra thing. We need to incorporate it into the culture and make a cultural shift. Mm. And so why aren't we doing this with new teachers? Why aren't we teaching them about the brain-body connection? Why? There's a lot of people entering the system or in the system who simply don't have knowledge. And the other piece to that is a lot of the teachers we work with, actually 93% of teachers do care about student mental health, but they don't know how to respond. They feel ill-equipped. And so once they have the tools, like you, right? You have tools. You come off as being confident and calm because you can. You've got the tools. When you know what to do, you have confidence and you can reflexively do something. Or if you make a mistake, it doesn't hurt as much to own it. A lot of people are stuck in guilt and shame and pain, and they can't break free from that to even have ownership. So we start playing the blame game and stuff too. So again, it all does come around. It's all about understanding the big problem, but again, the approach has to just be simplified and then we can make some changes.
So first of all, thank you, right? I think people who know me, who are listening, like any of my staff members, if they listen at all, right, I'd be surprised. But they're like, oh, it's not a superpower. He just has the tools. And I too can have the tools and thus have these, you know, the capacity and the abilities to do this work. And so as we close this piece out, I'm sure that those who are listening to this are going to say, you know what? I wish that I could join Charlie in, you know, North Carolina at NCMLE, right? Which you can, if you're listening, make sure you click on the links in the show notes. But let's just hypothetically say that they're not at the conference or they're listening to this afterwards and they're like, I missed out. I should have been there. How can they learn from you? How can they connect? How can they grow with you?
Oh my goodness. I mean, please reach out to me personally. I don't want anyone shying away from sending an email to me because I will absolutely respond to you personally. A lot of us are struggling out there and we have to lean on other people. So reach out to me by my email. It's Charlie, CHARLE at thrivingeducator.org. Or you can just go to thrivingeducator.org. There's some free resources on there. Go and download the Rapid Resets under the resources page. It's totally free. There are 10 of them. They're like 30-second shifts of energy that you can do to actually help your students, but also you sneak it in there so you can help manage your own feelings and needs in that moment. So there's a lot there, but go check that out. And please reach out to me personally.
Well, thank you so much. I will be sure to include that information in the show notes. So, you know, if you're driving right now, please do not try to jot that information down. You can always catch it later. But Charlie, I just want to say thank you. You know, of course, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for having me on your show in like two different formats. So thank you for connecting with me three different times this month. But more importantly, thank you for doing this very, very important work. I think what you're saying, just it makes sense, right? It's simple and it's, you know, sustainable. And it will help us to shape the space of education. And of course, when one of us does this work and it improves this realm, then it makes all of our jobs easier. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm grateful to be able to do the work and have the framework to easily deliver it. That was part of a barrier. So it's these conversations truly that are helping everybody. So thank you.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you, and I am sure that we will connect soon. Until next time. I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.